Okay, we are going to move on to our next item two. And Kyle Abram is going to lead us here, and I will I turn it over to Kyle.
Thanks, Chair Kelly. Chair Kelly, board members, State Forester Mugimoto, for the record, my name is Kyle Abraham, and I serve as Deputy State Forester. I think it's the first time I've said that in a board meeting. Still a little bit surprising. It's great to see everybody here today. We do have several folks joining us on this topic to talk a little bit about what Congressman Blumenauer mentioned in terms of collaboration and work in the legislative session. So this is really a topic about the Private Forest Accord and three bills that made it through the session this year, which we've been keeping the board members apprised of. And you've heard us talk about this a little bit within the context of the Forest Resources Division work plan, which will follow this topic and really highlight some of the work in front of the department and the board. But I would like to introduce Jason Miner with the Governor's Office, Heath Curtis with Hampton Lumber, Jim James, and Ken Nygren representing Oregon Small Woodlands Association, Bob Van Dyke with Wild Salmon Center, and Sean Stevens with Oregon Wild. There were several folks that engaged in these conversations over the last 2 years, and these are just a few of the folks that I could get to agree to come today and talk a little bit about some of their experiences and insights over the work, and maybe share some perspective about what their relationships have been over that time frame. And really, obviously a success for Oregon. I think some of the language has been about the, continuation of the Oregon way. And I would, maybe just echo that this is the way. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jason first and then over to Heath to kind of talk a little bit about what they experience, and then I'm sure folks will add some comments, and then really want to save some time for board discussion and input. So thank you. Jason, if you'd like to take it away, that'd be great.
Thanks, Deputy State Forester Abraham. That was my mic check, and seeing a smile means my audio must be working, correct?
Yep,
Great.
sounds great.
For the record, my name is Jason Miner. I serve as Governor Kate Brown's Natural Resources Policy Director. And thank you, Chair Kelly. Thanks, members of the board. Thanks, presenters, members of the department, and everybody in the public attending the Board of Forestry meeting today. Appreciate it. And I want to begin by saying, if I may, on behalf of the group presenting today and all the groups that they represent, a real thank you to the board, to the chair, to members of the board, and to the department for affording this group of people the space over the past 2 years at least to engage in conversations that were difficult, that were different, that didn't always follow the patterns that we've established in state government over the past 10, 20, or more years. But I just want to acknowledge that it must have taken a lot of trust, confidence, patience on your parts. And I, on behalf of the governor, appreciate that. And I know the folks who are presenting today appreciate that you afforded this group the space to try something different. And, as a result, to be able to come back today and present something different to the board that we hope is a meaningful and transformative way forward. So heartfelt thanks to all of you on the board and to all the ODF staff here, because I think the same no doubt extends to you. And I want to say, I think I read the agenda item, and I think there are two ways to read this, the subheader on our agenda item. One is that we might walk through the PFA report itself. And I want to make clear, I don't think that that is what the assembled crew here is to do. I think we're here to talk about lessons learned and our experiences in the room. So I will just say that I think you're here in the company of folks who have read 1501, 1502, 4055, and the PFA report cover to cover. The PFA report itself is a fantastic read. And for those of you who may not have read it, I encourage you to dig into it. This experience, the documents attached to the legislation, meaning the PFA report on your website, is unlike really any other thing that I've seen in the legislature in the past 5 years. Very approachable, very readable, well-structured. The subject headings will give you a good outline and everybody in the public a good outline of what we are talking about here today, from riparian approaches, steep slopes, adaptive management, small forest landowner approaches, roads, beaver and east side approaches. It is all laid out there. It's all artistic, elegant, and well presented, and I recommend it to you. So I will shift quickly to what I think we are here to talk about today, and that's a bit of lessons learned. And in some way, in putting these couple of points that I feel like I experienced for the past couple of years, 12 months in particular, I think in some ways my comments might have gone better at the end. And so I just maybe encourage you, if I may indulge myself and say, some of these reflections may be more conclusory reflections as folks further on in the lineup go through their experience. But I'll go through about six things that I think I wanted to convey to the board. And I think one is to acknowledge this time right now, we're at a pivot point, March 9th, 2022, where this work is shifting from the group of people in front of you to the board and department. And I began this by saying thank you for the space to do this work. And I think my first thing that I'd want to convey is now is the time to close that space or transition that space. And I think no one in this room expects that space will persist. And instead, we recognize that this is a transition to strong board leadership, strong department leadership, and all the hard work that went on here. Second, as I read, as I had the obligation to read 1501 cover to cover, as I filled out the blue sheet for the governor, it is rife full with timelines and deadlines. And those timelines, expediency, completing those rulemakings, populating the boards or populating the groups to do that work. I am struck by, we are entering a period of timelines and deadlines, which we all have to stay attentive to. And I will be here in the governor's office working with you and waiting for calls from you to do anything I can to help meet those timelines and deadlines. The third thing that I draw on, and it was touched on, I think it was touched on a little bit in the earlier conversation today. It struck me during the past 2 years that it is amazing that in February, if you think back to February of 2020, which was just prior to many of the changes that the pandemic brought about in the way that we do work and the way that in the future of work, it is amazing to me that these groups sat down in February and struck an MOU, which I think at its heart, you can say, was about valuing the importance of certainty. And so how prescient that a month before, as I recollect, March 13th was the day that I left the office, and was not really, did not take that box back. How prescient that a group of people would come together and think about the value of certainty. I think there are a few things that could teach us the value of certainty more than the past couple of years in these contexts. And then I might shift a little bit to, things, again, having reflected on the report and the legislation, there are things that are not written in there that I think that I would want to convey at this time of transition. And that's, one thing that I heard mentioned often amongst the conversants in this group was a recognition that work somewhat like this has gone before us in the state of Washington. Conducted a collaborative process in some ways dissimilar, but in some ways similar to what we engage on the past couple of years. And one thing that I think resonates from learning from Washington is there will be a period of time where the experience and recollection of the parties who were in these conversations are invaluable. Where the parties who are in these conversations, will be wanting to serve on the advisory groups, and required to serve in some ways on the advisory groups to the legislation, there will be a period of time where their recollections of what was explored and rejected might help keep things expedient. Their recollections of what was explored and embraced might help with the way things move forward. So I just want to acknowledge, I think one of the pieces of learning from Washington that I'm not sure appears anywhere in the writing is everyone on the board and the department should feel compelled in some cases to reach out to the people who participated in this process for additional context, not that it can change anything that is in writing, because it can't, but to inform all the conversations that went on and how we go forward. And then lastly, sort of a two-part thing, I think an interesting obligation of the board is to decide at what point in the future those reflections of everybody who did participate in the private forest accord negotiations are in some ways just another stakeholder, because there will come a time, this is public policy and everyone is engaged and everyone cares, everybody invested in forestry cares about these issues. And just as, you know, acknowledging this is a pivot point, at some point in the future, memories will begin to fade, and there will be an acknowledgement that every voice is equally able to reflect on the words of the Private Forest Accord as anyone else. But I would say I think that there is one exception to that, and that is the biggest thing that I saw in the past 9 months was the ability of people to come together and reject the tools of confrontation and instead embrace the tools of collaboration. And I think more than any comparison of science or competing points of view, that ability to simply make the choice to collaborate when there were other choices on the table was invaluable. And I think, you know, even 15 years from now, being able to draw on the experience of anybody who is at the table to reemphasize the value of working together and how it has led to greater outcomes than we ever could have achieved by working in conflict will be something that I think carries great value, because it was said on the floor of the legislature, I think the true value of this agreement extends beyond the PFA itself to the commitment to work together and to continue to flex the muscle of collaboration. And that's hard work, and it will continue to be hard work. I remember David Bechtold reflecting at one pivot point about November 1st, saying, I feel like I just won a pie eating contest and the prize is more pie. And I think that has been every step of the way along the PFA, that the product of this hard work is more hard work. And that hard work is continuing to remind ourselves that flexing the muscle of collaboration has value. And I will leave it at that. Thank you, board.
Thank you, Jason. Heath, looks like you'd like to go next. So Heath and then Jim.
Oh, I just heard my name is next. I don't think we discussed an order, but I'm happy to do it. Chair Kelly, members of the board, State Forester, thanks for inviting me to share a few words with you today. My name is Heath Curtis, and I work for Hampton Lumber and Family Forests. Hampton's a fourth generation family-owned company with four sawmills and approximately 90,000 acres of timberland in Northwest Oregon. Our operations provide roughly 800 Oregonians with year-round family wage jobs, predominantly in rural areas where those jobs are tough to come by. For Hampton, community health and vitality has been a priority since the company's inception in 1942. I think it's safe to say today that we in particular are known for being engaged, responsive, and valued members of the communities in which we operate. Of Hampton's many successes over our 80-year history, this unflinching commitment to community in good times and in bad is probably the greatest source of pride for the Hampton family and our employees. For the last 2 years, I've had the privilege of working on the Private Forest Accord. It's a grand compromise in the truest sense on Oregon forest practices. At Hampton, we genuinely believe that the accord is the right path forward. It will enhance habitat for fish and amphibians. And in the long run, we believe it'll be good for the Oregon timber industry because it'll provide the stability businesses need to continue to operate and invest in the local forest product sector. That Oregonians could come together and resolve difficult issues through dialogue and compromise is certainly worth celebrating. What was made clear throughout this process is that while we each might have different ideas on how to effectively maintain and protect forest waterways, all parties to the accord share the twin goals of achieving both healthy ecosystems and productive forest lands. But if I may, I do want to highlight the very serious nature of the undertaking. In many places in Oregon, the private forest accord will result in double-digit losses of private timberland. And that comes at a price, not only to the landowner, but to the small family-owned businesses that work these lands year after year. I grew up in Eastern Oregon during the 90s, and I witnessed what casual natural resource policy can do to rural communities. In my hometown, doctors moved away, restaurants closed, kids went hungry, and more people found themselves battling addiction. It was a disintegration that was painful for all who witnessed it, but particularly those who, like I do, feel that such hardship was unnecessary and avoidable. Please make no mistake, the private forest accord will result in mill closures, particularly when combined with proposed harvest reductions on state forests. And the community supported by those mills will feel it intimately. This weighs heavy with me personally and with the Hampton family and our employees. This angst is compounded by some skepticism that what we did was indeed informed by the best available science. Everyone at the table was able to cite research in support of their positions. In a very general sense, what we've done is shift our practices from one side of the confidence interval to the other. With the PFA, Oregon's forest practices will be extremely precautionary when it comes to aquatic wildlife. That's not so much science as it is policy, and it required weighing costs and benefits. I've outlined some of the costs, so what are the benefits? Chief among them is the promise that if we could come to agreement, the federal wildlife agencies would support us with an incidental take permit, an ITP. While we don't believe our practices commit take of salmon today, that's important, an ITP under an approved habitat conservation plan is a strong public signal from the federal wildlife agencies that we're doing a good job. There will always be those out there who think we should do more. Some folks just don't like the idea of cutting trees and they never will, but if the federal agencies sign off on our salmon conservation efforts, we think most Oregonians will be satisfied too. Second, the private forest accord includes an adaptive management process that we believe when combined with the agency's statutory obligations will produce a deliberate and manageable rate of change to Oregon's forest practices going forward. The PFA is comprised of voluntary concessions on the part of timberland owners. Our genuine hope is that these changes produce regulatory stability, allowing us to invest in Oregon with confidence that the conditions of investment will not radically change going forward. So with that, we think the trade-off was worth it. Hopefully with the PFA in place, Oregonians can be as proud of Oregon's working for us as we are. If I may, please know that Hampton did not act alone. Though there are many who invested significant time and energy in this process, it's worth mentioning specifically those on the industry negotiating team, including Eric Geyer at Roseburg, Diane Myers at Weyerhaeuser, Adrian Miller at Rainier, Cameron Krause at Swanson, and David Bechtold with Northwest Resource Lot, and Brenda Geraltz at Lone Rock pitched in everywhere he could. These individuals, like the companies they represent, engage this effort with the best of intentions, with the goal of ensuring the long-term health and stability of Oregon's working forest and the communities that surround them. We genuinely appreciate your help seeing it across the finish line. And to that end, I'm confident this will be the largest and most difficult rulemaking in ODF's history. I genuinely am. It will require extraordinary resources on a very short time frame. Please give them the flexibility and resources they need to get the job done. The private forest accord depends on it. And if I may, just off script for a moment, I do want you to know that I witnessed over the last 2 years the opportunity to work collaboratively and meaningfully with organizations and specifically organizational leaders who I had considered staunch adversaries for my entire career, that I was able to build personal relationships and I would say some mutual respect, abundant mutual respect for Sean Stevens and Bob Van Dyke, I think really says something about this process. They've taken risk in this process and I acknowledge that. And I think that their organizations should be commended and recognized as leaders in the environmental movement in getting hard work done. So with that, thank you for taking my comments.
Jim, would you like to say a few words?
Yeah, thanks, Kyle. Yeah. My name is Chair Kelly. State Forester. My name is Jim James. I represented the Oregon Small Woodland Association in the Private Forest Accord. And I've experienced a lot of changes in the forest practice rules. But this process was unique in that a lot of the agreements that we were trying to achieve were identified in advance. For example, the habitat conservation plan for aquatic species, sustaining the wood products industry in Oregon and recognizing disproportionate impacts to family woodland owners. The process was also defined in advance to where we would work collaboratively and negotiate to find answers that solved and achieved the goals that we were looking for. Early in the process, it became clear to me that everybody who signed the agreement was committed to what we had agreed to. But the vision of how to achieve that was specifically and uniquely different. And the process that we set up then actually forced us to investigate the rationale for other sides' opinions, to clear up misunderstandings of what the current rules were and what the current achievements with the current forest practice rules were. And we identified the factors that would influence the outcomes that we were all looking for. And there was plenty of opportunities to question one another for that rationale and to work to try to understand how we could work to find some elements of compromise. And I'd like to use the small woodland owner process as an example of how that worked. We originally recognized that there would be disproportionate impacts to family forest landowners. And then we openly discussed the role that family forest landowners play in the wood products industry and in the protection of very important riparian habitat. We discussed the differences between small woodland owners and large landowners and investigated if there were opportunities to do things differently. We agreed that it would be environmentally beneficial to maintain family forest lands as forest lands and not be economically motivated to convert to other uses. And we agreed that family woodland owners were going to need some more assistance than currently provided by the Department of Forestry because of the complication of what the new rules would look like. So with all these in mind, we questioned one another. We offered back and forth proposals. And at the end of the day, we agreed on some family woodland owner policies for Western Oregon and for Eastern Oregon. And I might say that the outline for our final agreement was actually a proposal from the ENGOs after we were trying to find an adequate solution. And I appreciated their insight to recognizing the difficulties that family woodland owners had and to truly work to find solutions that would be successful. I think I mentioned that the Department of Forestry will have some additional roles for family woodland owners. We've recommended, or actually in the standard, ODF will need to have a special office specifically to assist family woodland owners. There'll need to be educational outreach through the ODF partners in the Partnership for Forestry Education. There's going to need to be some assistance for family woodland owners who harvest less frequently. There's some financial assistance programs that ODF will coordinate. And there's some incentives for family woodland owners to comply with the same practices that large landowners do that, again, will be coordinated by ODF. There were some important lessons that I learned through this process. I think Heath addressed it where some of the folks we were negotiating with had been our adversaries. But I learned that by being open-minded and to really search for the rationale of why people feel the way they do, it was not so difficult to find alternatives and compromises that would work for both. And investigating those conversations developed trust, and finding common ground on the minor issues made it much easier to address the more complicated issues. The process was challenging, but the determination by all the participants, including the governor and governor's staff, federal and state agencies, a hired facilitator, and the commitment by all to do what we had agreed to do ended up in our agreement. If all the parties continue to be engaged, and I know that we will, I believe that the private forest accord will be a very successful story. I thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thanks, Jim. Let's Sean and then Bob, and then we'll turn it over to the board for some questions. I think
Kyle, it's all right.
Over time, but
Bob's going to go first, if that's all right, Kyle.
That's great.
Thanks.
Yeah, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. I'm having video problems for some reason, but despite my life on Zoom, it's not working today. Chair Kelly, board members, Forrester Mukamoto. My name is Bob Van Dyke. I live in Forest Grove, Oregon, and work for the Wild Salmon Center. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on the private forest accord. I'd like to briefly offer my thanks to everyone who contributed to the PFA, but especially to the people on the panel I'm sharing time with today. I would add Diane Myers of Weyerhaeuser and Aurora Goddard of the Legislative Council Office to the short list of thank yous, but there's a pretty long list of thank yous to make as well. I'll save that for later. I'm grateful that we're now moving from negotiation and passage of the PFA to implementation. As you're aware, the PFA and related legislation set out a variety of tasks for this board, from completing a great deal of rulemaking and a draft of the HCP later this year, to initiating new rulemaking and standing up several new committees. The board obviously has a critical role to play in making implementation a success, and so I offer several comments and suggestions in that regard. First, keep your eyes on the prize, which from my view is the completed HCP. If the HCP is not completed by the end of 2027, most of the changes brought by the PFA will roll back to current law. That will mean wasted effort and unhelpful drama. So please help keep the PFA as a top priority. Second, better integrating with ODF&W. The PFA directs a more significant role for ODF&W in forest practices, implementation, and policy. I encourage you to consider ways to further cement ties with your sister agency. This might include periodic joint meetings with the Fish and Wildlife Commission as a whole, as well as strengthening ties to individual commission members. The commission itself will also be directing the multi-million dollar mitigation fund and making rules on beaver. We also realize that including more than one agency in decision-making can result in unhelpful delays. To that end, we think the board should track staffing at ODF&W as it pertains to PFA implementation. ODF&W may need your support to ensure they can engage in a timely manner on forest practice administration. Third, new relationships may create new opportunities. PFA built new relationships among stakeholders and agency staff. Some of these relationships will be maintained through new entities created by the PFA, like the Adaptive Management Program Committee, which includes stakeholder representation. Look also for opportunities to help stakeholders work on solutions outside of ODF or with only more modest ODF involvement. Fourth, become champions of the PFA. The PFA will need vocal supporters on this board. I encourage you to especially develop contacts with key legislators and the governor's team to build support for PFA implementation. Support will also take the form of prioritizing budget requests for the PFA in your POP process. There will be a POP for PFA implementation in the next biennium, for example. In addition, ODF will need your support to prioritize outreach to the public to build understanding and support for the new rules. And then lastly, tend especially to small forest landowners. Oregon is fortunate to have a large and diverse small forest landowner community, and they contribute mightily to many conservation outcomes. The PFA created a significant new office to address the needs of small forest landowners. Office includes new staff, dedicated restoration funding, and a largely educational assistance mission. The new rules are complex in some areas and contain a variety of management options, as well as new reporting requirements and a tax credit program. So the PFA envisions more frequent and direct support to small forest landowners by stewardship foresters. There's also work to be done integrating small forest landowner outreach for the PFA with outreach that's directed by SB 762 or fire preparedness issues. So that's an area where ODF's divisions may want to try to cooperate across lines. So in summary and more broadly, I really encourage you to be mindful of balancing your efforts between overseeing ODF on the one hand and building support for the PFA and agency with stakeholders outside of the agency. I'd like to go off script a little bit too and thank particularly, I've been asked by a lot of people why this happened, how did it work, why did it work this time, you know, what made this route happen? And frankly, I think a really important reason is some decisions by leaders in the forest industry sector, from Oswa and Jim James here today, from the head of Hampton, Weyerhaeuser, Roseburg, other companies that decided to pursue this approach. And there were risks for them in this process, certainly. That community has not, in general, been open to trying this kind of process. So I just want to express my appreciation today and the value I take from the commitment and the risks those folks take to get us here today. Thanks, and I'm happy to try to answer questions as well.
All right, can everyone hear me okay? Great. Chair Kelly, members of the board, Forrester Mukimoto. My name is Sean Stevens. I'm the executive director of Oregon Wild, and I served as the co-lead of the conservation negotiating team during the private forest accord mediation, along with my colleague, Bob Van Dyke, who you just heard from. I'll just quickly echo the comments that Heath and Jim and Bob have made about some of the unexpected surprises from this process, and really finding, you know, that there's that phrase, you can disagree without being disagreeable. I think it was much more than that. We're all fierce advocates for our causes, and we were asked to seek a middle ground, and doing that it is not easy. And I think that we all have respect for those that we were at the table with. And I appreciate the sentiments that Heath and Jim passed along. Although Heath, you owe me a donut. The process that has led to the private forest accord and now the important implementation role that the board and the agency have, it's been a long and arduous one. We've had 4 months of intense work to draft legislation and finalize the PFA report. Before that, 10 incredibly full months of negotiations where all the parties sacrificed personally and professionally to forge the compromise that became the PFA. Even before that, we had a legislative walkout that put at risk the original MOU between our parties, and we had nervy moments working through the first special session of the 2020 to get the first piece of the puzzle in place. And just over 2 years ago, a lunch meetup between competing factions set to take their opposing ballot measures directly to the people. That meetup eventually led to the governor's first successful effort to mediate between these parties. In reporting on the private forest accord, the media have usually started right there with the governor, bringing the parties together to find a different way forward. And the governor and her staff have played an incredibly important role in bringing us to this point today. But it really isn't the start of the private forest accord story. The struggle to find a new way forward for forestry in Oregon goes back much further, and it's not always as hunky-dory. But I believe that remembering those struggles that came before the PFA can help this body, this agency, and the parties to the accord do better in the future. Not surprisingly, I think you'll hear some differences between how Heath and I reflect on the past. I believe that the private forest accord is in no small part a product of decades of inaction or inadequate action to keep Oregon's forest laws current. And despite plenty of the requests over the years, the agency, the board, the legislature, been slow to modify the OFPA to keep up with new and emerging science. And it's why the changes in the private forest accord are quite sweeping. Put simply, we'd fallen pretty far behind. And I don't bring this up to dwell on past decision-making or resurface old wounds. Rather, I think we can draw a lesson from the past that should serve us well going forward. And Bob and Heath have already mentioned the new relationships that have been created through this process. I really urge the board and the department to double down on these new ties between stakeholders to ensure that all parties have equal access to information and an equal voice in ODF decision-making. But perhaps the greatest opportunity to avoid falling back into old patterns is the new adaptive management program authorized in SB 1501. The negotiators took great pains while designing this new program to learn from some of the struggles of similar adaptive management efforts in our region. And I think at its best, an adaptive management program will avoid the exact inertia that ultimately led to the competing parties to try ballot measures. Across the 50-year lifespan of this HCP, we're going to need science-based, stakeholder-driven process to produce change when it is needed, if it is needed, if we're to succeed. And I think a key part of that adaptive management process is the science. And it's part of the reason that we designed the adaptive management process to have an independent research and science team to ensure that that scientific inquiry would be as independent as possible. And the PFA specifically envisions that this body could be housed at ODF, could be housed at another agency or at a university. And I urge the board to give strong consideration to the best approach here to keep that science independent, because I think it has the potential to preserve and strengthen ODF's credibility as we move forward. Getting to this point hasn't been easy, and I've got no illusions that the process ahead is going to be free of confrontation and disagreement. However, I do sincerely believe that the structure in the PFA, combined with this new willingness to engage in honest, albeit difficult conversations, really has Oregon on the right path. Thanks for listening to us today and for your service on this important board.
Back to you, Jim.
Okay. We are behind schedule, and I would really like to gush here in appreciation for what's happened here, but I'll try to keep it short. I think there's just, Jason, I don't understand the thanks to us, because we've really been quiet cheerleaders, hoping through this whole process that it would be successful. But it's all of you guys, the governor's office and all and both sides here, who have put this together. No one is more appreciative of the success of this and what it means for today and what it means, I hope, for process going forward in the future than the Board of Forestry. None of us, relish those decisions when we are faced with opposing science that ends up being like apples and oranges, and two sides that are in vehement disagreement, and our choices are narrowed down to what's the likelihood of who's going to sue us next. So this is a world of difference. I just can't express how much appreciation we have for the phenomenal amount of work. And having read it, I am the amount of work for the board and the department is also monumental and sobering. But I think you guys have done a tremendous job of showing us a new way, and thank you. Open it up to any other board questions or comments, and we'll try to keep this as brief as possible so we aren't too much further behind schedule. Carla Chambers.
Yes, just real quickly. And, I want to add my thanks to all of you for the leadership here. I know this was an intense process, but I wondered if maybe Heath and Bob, if you'd make one or two sentences of comments. There was balance built into this process. And I'd like you to give the board words of wisdom for keeping that balance going forward. And how you were thinking about that balance, among yourselves during this process.
Well, I think Sean struck on some of it from my perspective. A habitat conservation plan, we hope, generates some certainty in the investment environment going forward. That is to say, it would be very difficult for the industry if they would have sacrificed billions of dollars of forest land only to begin sacrificing more the next day. We think that this process and the product of the PFA will generate certainty for the industry and industry investments. And Sean highlighted that has to be balanced, I think, with very thoughtful and deliberate assessment of whether what we're doing is adequate going forward. Otherwise, as he says, if things swing wildly out of balance, then it starts becoming a real risky environment for investment going forward. And so if I were to respond to that question, I suppose I'd respond to it in that way. That is to say, there's a real tension here between the certainty and stability that the PFA generates and ensuring that when we see the need for change going forward, we ensure that we take the opportunity to implement it thoughtfully.
I don't have a lot to add there. Thanks, Board Member Chambers, for your question there. I do think the adaptive management process is a crucial piece. I guess I'd say more broadly that in recent years, Oregon, especially I look at the legislature, seems to be changing pretty dramatically in terms of some of the interests of the legislators there, as well as the public and its interest in broader forest policy. So I feel like there's a chance for the board to also do a reset in thinking about a broader set of stakeholders and communicating to the wider public and legislators about who you are and what you do and the kind of broad public values that are brought by the work you do and in the PFA. So I'm not sure that answered your question, Carla, but I do think there's an opportunity to look to a wider circle to both educate and listen to going forward.
Okay, Joe Justice.
Yeah, thanks, Chair Kelly. Just real quick, I really appreciate the fact that in Eastern Oregon that the stream rules agreed in the PFA really are different, and consider the difference of forest health, and that's a big deal to me. And so I just wanted to point that out. I also agree, Jim, this is a heavy lift of rulemaking. Now this is a tremendous amount of work in front of the department. I'm curious, Kyle or Josh, how are you going to engage stewardship foresters? I've been talking to local stewardship foresters who I communicate with fairly regularly here in Eastern Oregon. Those are your experts in the field related to rulemaking. Are they going to be a part of, or are you going to bring them into the committees to discuss and talk about how are we going to write these rules? Just as a quick question.
Yeah. Thanks, Board Member Justice. The short answer is yes. And so Josh does have a pretty detailed plan of how we're going to engage stewardship foresters and, a bunch of other folks, including the PFA authors in those rulemaking groups. So yeah, maybe there's an opportunity to connect, in a little bit about what that plan looks like.
Okay, Chandra.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Chandra Ferrari for the record. I also would like to thank the parties for this monumental work and also for the PFA report, which I think is really well done. And I've heard that from a lot of other stakeholders as well. So appreciate that. And also the commitment to science and information that I think really comes through in that report, both in terms of science moving forward, but also in terms of getting solid baseline information that is easy to understand how you're collecting the information. It's going to be accessible to all parties, and there's landowner validation and participation into that process. So I think that's really unique and a really robust piece of this. So my question, I just wanted to address Bob's point real quick too on the engagement with other agencies, particularly ODFW. That is a big piece of this report, and I agree that coordination moving forward is important. And we had discussed having maybe a liaison to the ODFW commission before. And I think that might be an important thing to explore. But my question has to do with the report authors and how they're going to engage together moving forward. Cause I recognize we're in a transition point, but I think there's a role in there. I see that they've been considering for adaptive management. And there's also just language sprinkled throughout the report that says, the authors, there's these outstanding issues and the authors will work together to have dialogue about those. And so I'm just curious if you guys have given thought to how you're going to engage together moving forward.
I'll take that, I think. Thanks for that, Chandra. I don't think there's been a lot of conversations about that. We've been at the same dance for a long time now. And so some of us are ready to maybe not dance so often, but we're gonna be engaged and are already organizing ourselves around the rulemaking. So we've got some steady engagement there. I think there'll be opportunities with the appointments to the Adaptive Management Committee, as well as the Mitigation Committee, to have areas where conversations can continue to take place. But I think it's worth thinking. The party certainly can think, but the board or ODF may want to think too about how to nurture those relationships over time, however informally, to make them work. So maybe others have things to add, but I guess those are my initial thoughts.
We were careful in the body of the legislation and the report to style the authors as those organizations. I think, you know, as a testament to the importance of this work, I mean, on the industry side, the companies mobilized senior officers in all of these huge companies to work on this. Literally their best and most thoughtful negotiators, maybe with the exception of me, I would say that the teams going forward are not likely to be comprised of specifically the same individuals. And I think that that's a good thing. That is to say, to the degree we can create a larger web and more humans working together on this process, I think the more durable and robust this work will be going forward. But trust that none of us are abandoning this effort in any way. And we remain 100% committed and invested to see this across the finish line. Now and into the future, frankly.
Okay, if there's no other questions, Kyle, I think we'll wrap this up. Is there anything else you wanted to say?
No, Chair Kelly, just thanks for everybody being here today.
Okay, yes. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Once again, we're just so impressed with this work, and it just feels like you know, if these timber wars are ever to have in history an end, we hope that what you all have done is what marks that end. So with that, we are a half hour behind schedule. And so I think I'd like to have our morning break right now. And let's cut that down to 10 minutes, 10 or 11 minutes. So let's it's 10:29. Let's come back at 10:40 for the next item on our agenda. Well, with that, we are adjourned for 10 minutes.